Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
It's Craig Moore. What a piece. Beautifully struck home by Craig Moore, and the Australian supporters go wild in Stuttgart.
Why not? Nixon's corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood at the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes to spectacular. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He's
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again. Good to have your company for another edition of Shim, Spider, and so much more. And while there might not be much action on the pitch, there is plenty going on off it. A collective bargaining agreement signed for the national teams, but still unsigned for the A-League. A list of 30 clubs released by AAFC who are keen to join a national second division. And the release of the new kits for the Socceroos and the Matildas, with the away jersey for the latter apparently unavailable in women's cut. A women's national team jersey that women can't buy to fit? Only in football in Australia. Joining me as per usual to run the rule over the sometimes bewildering world of the game in this country are Zeljko Kalac from his taverna in Greece and Craig Moore from his bothy in Glasgow. Maury, you've gone home to Scotland. What are you doing, big yin?
Back home in Scotia, big man. Back, I tell you what, I'm getting slapped about already, getting up at 3 a.m. and Spider's, what, 5 a.m. and Simon, you're 12 o'clock lunchtime. But look, the idea being back here in Scotland now is to to build a football management company along with my former player agent, Simon. So a lot of meetings, looking to recruit players, and exciting times ahead. Great thing about being over here, Spider, as you'll know, is there's a game every day. If there's not a game, there's a talk show, there's a radio show. It's football heaven.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And you're not getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, but we're doing it now, Maury, to do the podcast.
Spider, have you got a start date yet for the new Super League 2 season over there in Greece?
Yeah, 24th of October, which has been announced this week, which is fantastic for us anyway. It gives us a little bit extra time with the new players to work and get them fit and get them into the conditions that we want to play and do the shape. So that's fantastic for us. So we're excited by that.
Have you got keepers yet that you rate?
We brought one keeper in this week. Another keeper come in from Bosnia that was playing in Slovenia. So he's in, 25-year-old, good physical specimen. Looking forward to start working with him today, actually.
Okay, good stuff, guys. Let's kick things off with the podcast with Simon Says.
Simon Says.
So, 30 clubs this week officially registered their intent to be a part of a potential national second division. Under the working name of the Championship, which has caused a little bit of consternation, the new comp aims to be up and running by 2022. And it's released the rather cheeky motto of football as you know it. Ouch. Now, the release of this list has, as per usual, split the football community right down the middle. On the one side are those who believe it's time to reunite the game and that football needs a Division 2 to provide more playing opportunities. The other side, dismissive of the idea, when the top flight isn't exactly firing on all cylinders. Where is the money coming from, they cry. It is a fair point they make. With the game on a financial precipice, how do clubs such as Gungahlin United, just to use them as an example, make the leap from grassroots to theoretically becoming full-time pro? The answer is unclear. That model and the financial burden lies with the AAFC clubs. But I will say this, if there is even a remote possibility of making it work, then I think their efforts should be encouraged. At some point, the game of football has to be bold enough to construct its own future in this country. If we are serious about connecting the grassroots to the elite, then you cannot continue to shut them out. The key to future prosperity is through the thousands of players and clubs around the country who are currently too remote from the A-League. In 2015, the Whole of Football plan stated that just 22% of junior participants are fans of an A-League club, while other Australian sports counted up to 70% of their base as fans. Has anything changed in the intervening years? The 2015 plan stopped short of endorsing a Division 2 and promotion and relegation, suggesting instead a managed process of ins and outs to the A-League. Since then, we've had one in, none out, with MacArthur to enter this coming season. The 11 principles has gone a step further without explicitly naming the NSD. Principle 4 states that FFA wants to create a dynamic and engaging football product by optimising competition structures to connect Australian football, promote competitive balance and tension, promote uncertainty of outcome, incentivise sporting achievement, and prioritise the fan experience. Optimise, incentivise, prioritise. That's a lot of eyes. If only there were as many watching the game. But it's another that is the crux of the matter. Sanitise. At the moment, too many A-League games, in my opinion, lack that competitive tension due to certainty of outcome. No danger of relegation, no punishment for failure, little reward for excellence. You can finish below halfway, lose more games than you win, and still have a shot at the title. Therefore, the sanitised nature of the league means the fan experience is diluted. And that's before we even talk about oversized stadiums, substandard pitches, heavy-handed security, and ticket prices. A-League clubs are lukewarm to the idea of a second division and promotional relegation, and we understand why. It represents a threat to their seat at the top table and the financial guarantees that go with it. But I believe they're looking at it from the wrong perspective. I think the second division can actually help the A-League reboot and revitalise by introducing something unique to our landscape. Imagine the battle for those top spots in Division 2 and the fight to avoid the drop from the A-League. Fans will be immediately engaged. You could still wait the process in favour of the A-League clubs, have a playoff with the second leg at home for the bottom A-League side, for example, introduce stringent criteria such as financial guarantees from any promoted club, minimum numbers of members for entry, limit the TV dividend for the first year, whatever you want. That's all up for debate. Promotion relegation doesn't even have to start immediately. But we need to start the process and begin to remove the glass ceiling. It's hurting the sport. And we have a very small but very valuable window of opportunity in the current moment to implement this. Because of COVID and the reduction in revenues, the salary cap is likely to drop significantly. That reduces the financial chasm between A-League and NPL clubs. Secondly, our better players, whether we like it or not, are likely to leave, thus levelling up the standards somewhat between pro and semi-pro. The switch to winter aligns the seasons. A second division and ultimately promotion and relegation would help create at least a better narrative than just a poorer quality standalone A-League, in my opinion. 2 years ago, a senior TV exec gave a fascinating talk at the Sydney FC and Business Lunch, in which he said that in order to survive in a super competitive landscape, all sports had to find their points of difference. This is one of our big points of difference. Of all the codes, football is probably the only one that can implement a pyramid system. 4 or 5 years ago, when the A-League had real traction, a second division was seen as a long-term aspiration. Today, after years of squandered opportunities, governance wars, mismanagement, poor strategic thinking, and financial difficulty, I'd say it's an immediate must-have to re-engage fans. It would not only provide that missing narrative, a taste of which we have had and loved via the FFA Cup, but also give playing opportunities for our kids, development opportunities for our coaches, and more content to sell in the marketplace. Can the AAFC clubs pull it together and find a way? I don't know. If they can't, then make no mistake, this idea will be on the back burner for a generation or more. I repeat, it's on them because I don't think they're going to get much help from inside or outside the game. But let's give them every chance to succeed, because the alternative is to offer more of the same. A disconnected A-League surviving hand-to-mouth on ever-diminishing Fox Sports handouts, kicking the can down the road to some unknown destination in the hope that one day things might just get better. They can, but we have to force the issue. And I'd urge the game to be bold. Go for it. What have we got to lose? Maury, Spider.
Great show. Great show. Thanks for listening, guys. And see you next week.
That was a bit of a long one today. My apologies.
You're spot on, mate. There's nothing more to say. What was the logo they're using? The game as we know it.
Yeah.
That's what we know about the game, don't we? Relegation, fight for survival, big clubs, small clubs, mate, backs against the wall kind of stuff. And that's what everyone wants. You're spot on with what you said, Simon. We need people to start delivering now 100%.
Big question is money, Maury. That's the issue, isn't it? Where does it come from?
It is, Simon, but I mean, when you're looking to start up, and there needs to be investment as that startup, and hopefully these clubs that have put their hands up to want to be involved in a second division, that certainly needs to be part of the criteria. But in terms of the money and what the game can generate, I don't believe we're in a strong position unless we have a national second division. The pain will continue with the same as what we've seen. Unfortunately, so the word bold is important here, because that is something that we need to bring to the table now. I know we're talking about 2022. For me, that's still too late. I'll be looking at next year. Bring it in immediately, because I think with the expiry of the broadcast deal coming in June, July, we need to deliver and have a clear plan of something new to just generate fresh income to the game.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Maury. I think the word bold is a statement, because, I mean, what are they scared of? Like, normal state league season starting March anyway, Maury. We're in September now. So we really do have, half of September, October, November, December to go. So we've got 6 months before it can happen. And a lot of these clubs that want to play in the second division, they're already established. They're already playing. They're already there. It's not as if you're setting up a brand new franchise like MacArthur. They're there. The clubs are there just... Yeah. Saying, please let us play.
Okay, let's hope that we can get a second division up and running sooner rather than later. Let's move on to Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, which has been live streaming since 2008, specializing in custom-built stream pages, pay-per-view, and multi-language streaming. They can cater to large online conferences with multiple simultaneous streams and destinations, including all social media channels, servicing clients Australia-wide. Go to streamgate.com.au or find them on Instagram. So, guys, let's kick off with the never-ending saga of the CBA. Some good news this week with the national team CBA having been signed off, but we're still no nearer to the A-League striking a deal. Clubs pushing for this 30% for selected players. PFA said to favour a 20% cut across the board. And news in the Sydney Morning Herald late last week that the clubs might look to bypass PFA altogether and attempt to strike deals individually with players. This is only going to end one way, isn't it? And that's with FFA intervention at some point. Thoughts?
Well, I think it's crazy that we've actually got to this situation. But, I mean, we've all been in some sort of negotiations before, and we know what it's like. I really feel for the players. I do feel for the players, because the uncertainty of their careers is ridiculous at the moment. Maury would probably know a little bit more about this than what I would. Maury?
Yeah, no, look, it's a tough situation, and we've been speaking about it for a number of weeks now in terms of the concern of not only the restart, excuse me, but what next season looked like, what new contracts look like. Clubs are in severe pain, and certain clubs now wanting to have individual meetings with certain players. Look, I see, unfortunately, just pain that lies ahead in terms of these negotiations. There's going to be some disruption for both the players and the clubs. But the sooner they can, you know, get something agreed upon, the better, I think, for everybody. But there will be loss to the game. At the same time, there will be opportunity for new players, Spider, to come in.
Correct. Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, go on, Spider.
No, I agree with Maury said. Maybe the quality of players that we can bring to Australia will go down, but we'll give opportunity for the newer, younger Australian players. And you know what? That's a part of football. It's a revolving door, ain't it? That gives us the opportunity. And if we might have to take a bit of a hit for 2 or 3 years for the clubs to stabilise as well, the game will always be there. And this is why I think the second division is so important. Because if we can stabilise it and the A-League club's salary cap does come down, we all of a sudden go from 12 teams to possibly having 22, 24, you know, 30 teams. So, look, there will be some pain, but I think there's benefit at the end of it as well.
Just one more on this. Perth owner Tony Sage indicated in a release on the Perth Glory website on Sunday that he may look to stand players down. I don't know whether that's even legal. And that leads us into a Twitter question, Maury. I don't know whether you can answer this one. It's from Luke J. Thanks for your question, Luke. Can you explain how an agreed CBA can mandate pay cuts? I understand it sets the cap and floor, but aren't players individually contracted rather than being paid at a specified level set out in the CBA? It's an interesting question.
Yeah, no, look, it's a tough one, but I've heard the same thing, Simon, especially the Perth situation that, look, I think certain clubs will look to try and stand players down. That becomes a difficult situation because then the players don't actually, I believe, have the opportunity to leave. And smart by the clubs, potentially this is a way where, in terms of negotiation, if they want the players to take a 15, 20% cut by standing them down for 2 months, in effect, they'll be taking a hit.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair, Maury, to be honest to the players. Man, they have careers as well. And if they get stood down, I understand that from the club as well because they don't want to bleed as well. But then you've got to be able to, as a player, have an opportunity to go elsewhere. And we know, we've heard this kind of stuff in Europe a lot where players haven't received their pay. As soon as they haven't received their pay, they go to FIFA and they get a clearance and they can go to another club. So there's got to be something like that happening because I think it's not good for the players to actually get dictated to whether they can go elsewhere to earn a living. And it is their living.
I just think it becomes really, really ugly because, you mentioned FIFA there. Plus, I think it's, what is it, Fair Work in Australia. It just becomes a really, really messy situation that I don't think benefits anybody. So hopefully we don't go down that road. But look, anything's possible because there is, like I said, severe pain for the football clubs and they just don't see any money come through the doors at the moment.
Talking of that money, Maury and Spider, the rumour is that the clubs may obtain their independence. Goodness me, how many times have we heard this? As soon as the end of this month, now, I'm sure I'm not alone when I say I believe this when I actually see it, because it's been rumoured for so long. Club sources saying they want a full ownership model, such as the Premier League, FFA, said to favour retaining some control on the big issues, which may, again, delay things further. But is that actually the only solution to a lot of the game's ills at the moment, where the clubs get full control and then they can go out and get this much talked about special investment vehicle, go and attract outside money to actually revitalise the league, and therefore by extension, of course, get back to paying their players, you know, what they should be paid?
I think a lot of people would be for that to happen. Yeah. But again, is that the benefit of Australian football? I mean, or is that the benefit of the A-League itself? Now, this is my concern. We're all worried about what, one league, or are we worried about the game? I think the game's more important than just one league.
Spot on, Spider. You're 100% correct. Look, the independents and the clubs taking control, it needs to be supported by the FFA. At the moment, the FFA can't just sit back and say we're going to leave it up to you guys and all that sort of stuff. They've got to play a stronger supporting role, in my opinion, because the reality is the league and the clubs are in the position that they're in at the moment due to the way that the FFA governed and run the game.
You don't think the clubs paid any part in that as well, Maury? Because it appeared to me, and obviously I've worked in the A-League a long time as a commentator and broadcaster, that everybody sort of took their eye off the ball and almost passed the buck in many ways. It's your responsibility. No, it's not. It's yours. And the A-League sort of, you know, withered on the vine because nobody really gave it the care and attention that it required, including the clubs.
Yeah, I look, my big belief is, Simon, that we wouldn't be in this situation if 3 to 4 years ago, when I was still involved at Brisbane Roar A-League level, clubs were hurting in terms of the final series money going to the FFA, any commercial marketing deals in terms of car sponsorship and the like. You know, you need to bring in $1 million as a football club because $500,000 of that had to go to the FFA. So for me, a little tinker back then would have had the clubs happy because they would have seen more money coming through the door. So when I say that the FFA have a big part to play in all of this, those are the reasons, because I think if we sort of like were a little bit softer earlier on, we would be in a better position today. But at the end of the day, we need the game to connect. We need it to align. We've been saying that for years. And maybe, unfortunately, this is a situation that's brought it to a head.
Okay.
The other thing, guys, I think that we're forgetting, and, you know, I think the PFA have played a massive part in where the game's at the moment, because the only thing that's actually gone up is players' wages. So if we keep talking about where the salary cap started, Maury, and where it's at now, and then all these CBAs that keep coming to head, sooner or later, the money was going to run out and the clubs aren't getting this money. So the PFA, you know, really, I know they're fighting for the players to get the best thing for the players, but if there's no money in the game, we're draining all the money out of the game. That's a big problem. So they really need to have a good look at themselves as well.
Spider, we'll stick with you. I know you've got a pretty strong opinion on the fact that Perth Glory this week appointed Richard Garcia, and I think Steve McGarry is his number two as the new head coaching team to take over from Tony Popovich and Hayden Fox. Obviously, there's a big question mark over the future of Diego Castro as well, and potentially even Andrew Naboot and Nathaniel Atkinson, who are really struggling to get to WA to join the club because of the COVID situation in Victoria. What's your view on this appointment, Spider?
Mate, you know, for me, Simon, I'm just so disappointed that Hayden Fox didn't get his opportunity. I find it incredible that he didn't get his opportunity. Like, we talk about guys who have done apprenticeships. We talk about guys that have been assistant coaches and been successful. Like, he was very successful at Western Sydney Wanderers. He went to Perth with Popper, was very successful there. And for him to be overlooked, I just find it unbelievable. And, you know, I feel for Foxy because he'd be thinking to himself, what do I have to do? I've got to leave Australia. So I've got to go elsewhere to get an opportunity. And that for me is... When Foxy probably has a look around what's happening in the A-League and all the coaches that are getting opportunities, he'd be just saying to himself, well, what else do I have to do to get an opportunity?
Yeah, looking from the outside, though, Spider, it seems as if there's been some kind of power shift because I'm not sure. I mean, has Burnsy also been relieved of his duties, or has he moved on, Jacob Burns?
Mate, it's Perth Glory, mate. Let's be honest, Maury, mate. Does anyone know what's going on there? Like, I found that so a shock. Like, I actually just thought Foxy was going to get the job. I just thought it was normal. So then when I heard the announcement come out, and you know what? It's not about Richie Garcia. I'm not saying it's Richie Garcia's fault or whatever. It's when someone's been at the club and they've changed the club and it's been so successful the last 2 years, and you would have thought, and I mean this in all respect, you would have thought after Perth Glory seeing what happened to Western Sydney Wanderers when Popper left and they didn't give the job to Foxy and what happened to the Wanderers after that, you would thought Perth would have said, well, we don't want that to happen to us. We've had success. Foxy and the staff know exactly what's happening. We'll keep building from that. And they've gone a complete opposite way from people that... Have they really done their apprenticeship? Like Richie Garcia, has he really done an apprenticeship? What's he been coaching for, a year? That's all. It's not about anyone else. It's about, you know, how unfair. What does he have to do to get a job, more?
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's a tough one. Look, Foxy will be disappointed. you know, as you've touched on, he's had a great apprenticeship for a number of years now, and no doubt could have done the job well. Like it says, at the same time, we can't, you know, Richard Garcia, we know, is a local lad, and they've obviously had the view, Spides, that is the direction that they want to take. So I guess you've got to respect their decisions. But for a coach like Hayden Fox, with the limited roles in Australia, to potentially now think, well, my only opportunities are going to be overseas. Look, that's been the difficulty in Australia because of the lack of depth.
Okay, yeah. Let's move on, guys, from Perth. Just a quick one on the kit releases of the Socceroos and the Matildas this week, which has caused a huge amount of consternation because the away women's jersey isn't available in a women's cut. Now, the FFA says it is speaking to Nike. That's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Not really. Come on, guys. It's not that unbelievable.
You know, like, what are they thinking? Look, I just can't. Actually, I can. I'm not surprised. But you're just thinking, like, whoever's sitting down and negotiating these contracts, always in a contract, there's detail, yeah? And the new Matilda strip, where there's a massive market, and who's going to be buying those jerseys? But you know what? We don't have them for you. I mean, it's just madness.
Well, let's hope they can sort that one out. In terms of the new Matildas coach, it appears that Carolina Morace, the former Italian coach, is very much in the frame to take over from Ante Milicic. I don't know if we have a view on Carolina or that process, guys.
The process, Simon's a good one because I still don't know what it is. I've reached out to Trevor Morgan over the last day to see whether he was involved in the process. I've not had or heard anything back on that, which kind of then only sort of like leads me back to who is controlling the process. So obviously you've got James Johnson, you've got Sarah Walsh within the building with the female side of things, Board, Bresciano, and Amy Duggan. So look, I'm only guessing because I've heard nothing in regards to Carolina Marace. Look, she's obviously, a lady coach that was involved in, I think, a City C club in the men's side in Italy. She's managed national teams of Italy, Canada, Trinidad and Tobago. This is a massive, massive job. Whoever takes this job on for the Matildas, they will be expected to deliver World Cup success and any Olympic success. That is a pressure of the job. So is she experienced enough? Has she worked at a level? Time will tell.
She's worked as a head coach for the Canadian national team and the Italian team.
I get that. But the Canadian national team, you know, has the expectation ever been on the Canadian national team to win a World Cup or to win the Olympics? But that's the pressure of this job.
Okay. Well, one thing should be certain. She spent 13 years doing punditry on Italian TV. So as long as she speaks English, she should handle the media pretty well. One more question, boys, because we're going to have to move on to the next segment of the show. Some good news this week. Western United announcing plans to build a new training facility, complete with a 5,000 mini stadium. No news as yet on the 15,000 facility that their entry into the league was predicated upon. And also a concept video put out this week proposing a new sports arena at Riverbank West in Adelaide, which includes a home for Adelaide United, 22,000 capacity for football. Spider, it would be a pity to lose Hindmarsh because it is a fantastic stadium, but is this the way to go?
Yeah, look, Hindmarsh, as we all know, all of us who have been lucky enough to play there, is a fantastic state. I used to always love going to Adelaide, but they're headed in the right direction because if they do build a stadium that's 22,000 like that, and I've seen the design somewhere on this new technology, this Twitter thing that I keep looking at, I did see the design. It looks fantastic. What's that, buds?
Took you forever to get on the Twitter, but you're all over it now.
Mate, you know, when you throw out little designs and that, it looks fantastic. And you know, what a home for football in Adelaide like that. I mean, I know they've already got a Hindmarsh, but an updated model. We are in 2020, so would be fantastic.
Okay. Thanks, guys, for the moment. We're going to head overseas. London calling.
London calling.
So let's start London Calling with the game in London that happened overnight, Monday morning. Chelsea and Liverpool. Liverpool starting the defence of their crown with back-to-back victories after that narrow run thing against Leeds last week. But they were comfortable against Chelsea. And Spider, I want to ask you about the performance of Kepa the keeper, Arrizabalaga. What's going on with him? Frank Lampard came out and said, he needs my support. He's having a tough time of things. He sure is, isn't he?
Yeah, I think getting to grips with the speed of the Premier League is not easy. So, I mean, they've just got to give him time. If they believe in him, they've got to give him time. Time will tell at the end of the day. And I think Chelsea's good enough to bounce back for it. Look, he's a very good goalkeeper. And I think we've had the same discussion before about De Gea. Like, yeah. They don't seem to adapt as quick to the English Premier League because of the leagues they're used to. You either got to support him or you got to go elsewhere. I think you got to support him for now and see what happens.
It's going to be hard though, Spider, because linked over here in the press is the keeper Mendy from Rennes.
Mendy from Rennes, yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like another goalkeeper's coming in, and you're talking 20, 25 million, so he's not coming to sit on the bench.
That's true. Maury, I think I might have asked you this before, but Chelsea still waiting for Thiago Silva to make his Premier League debut. He is 35. How does he adapt to the Premier League? Is he the signing that Chelsea need in that area of the pitch?
Yeah, look, he's a highly, highly experienced player. They're obviously resting him up a little bit, due to overload with the amount of football that he's played, Thiago. But look, I think he'll come in and make a difference. I mean, the game-changing incident, obviously, against Liverpool was Christensen, the send-off. So, look, Thiago Silva will come in and do a very, very good job. He is at a decent age, but he's looked after himself, Simon, and I think he'll adapt and do quite well for Chelsea.
Staying with central defenders, Maury, which obviously is your specialist position, or was when you were a player, Manchester United losing at home to Crystal Palace. More defensive problems for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Harry Maguire and Victor Lindelof are all too often out of position.
Look, I've never been a huge fan of Harry Maguire, if I'm being honest. I still feel as if he needs that experienced central defender to play beside him and lead him. Lindelof is not that man either. Lindelof got absolutely ragdolled by Saha during this game. Crystal Palace, comfortable winners, could have scored more goals. Look, I still think Manchester United will be okay this season, but defensively, I think we've touched on before, a Koulibaly, they need a Jimenez. They need an out-and-out defender and somebody that I think can give some guidance and leadership that I think will be of benefit to Harry Maguire.
Spider, I want to ask you about Everton. They've started with back-to-back wins. Carlo Ancelotti, who I assume that you'd probably know reasonably well, or at least have met him on a few occasions, building something potentially a bit special at Goodison Park. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, 4 goals in 2 matches, but it's the performances of James Rodriguez, who we all know is a quality player, that's really catching the eye.
How good's Ancelotti? People who don't know him, what a man, what a manager, you know, like, I seen last week, Maury, one of his comments, one of the journos. Why do journos always try to, like, find trouble when it's not there?
That's our job, Spider. That's our job, mate.
Seriously. And Ancelotti put him in his place brilliantly. Like, talking about James, how he's not quick and he won't adapt to the Premier League. And Ancelotti just said, mate, if I wanted someone quick, I would have signed Usain Bolt before such Chris Mariners.
I don't think he included the line about the Mariners.
And then the last time he said, well, the last time he remembers that a football field all around the world are the same size. So I think it's a fantastic signing, and he gives something different. And I think the recruiting of Ancelotti has been fantastic. And I think all Everton supporters must be getting goosebumps the way the team is playing at the moment. Very exciting times for Everton and my new team in the English Premier League.
Right. Yeah, Spider, just quickly on that. Calvert-Lewin, he's touched on the advice that Ancelotti's been giving him in terms of getting in the right positions and one-touch finishing. A little bit similar, there was a quote here, a little bit similar to a player that Ancelotti worked with, Inzaghi.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Inzaghi was a serial pest. Let me give you the tip, mate. He was always there and just knew where the ball was going to drop, Maury. And that's instinct. And if you can start to learn those things by a manager like Ancelotti, you become a very good player. And the thing is, they're actually playing an attractive brand of football. So it shows to you that if you recruit well and the manager has his style of football and you bring the right players in, your game can change very quickly. And not many teams in the English Premier League play with an out-and-out number 10 like a James. So it's a special type of player.
Just on press conferences, which you mentioned there with Carlo Ancelotti, I don't know whether you saw the one during the week between Jose Mourinho and the British press over the potential signing of Gareth Bale to Tottenham. That was absolutely riveting watching the backwards and forwards between the coach and the media. Eventually, Gareth Bale has put pen to paper. Is he the signing that the Tottenham need?
Yeah, look, I think Tottenham, there's still a lot of uncertainty in terms of the media over here about whether Gareth Bale can come in and reach the levels that he's previously hit. But look, I think on the back of a performance where Son and Harry Kane were excellent in a demolishment job of Southampton, add Gareth Bale to that. Reguilon, they've also secured the services of. So all of a sudden, Tottenham fans are a little bit excited, let's say, over the weekend with a good performance, plus with Gareth Bale potentially coming in.
But guys, can I ask you a question? Like, I mean, yous would know better than me being over there in the UK and following it closely. Is Tottenham expected to win the Premier League? Like, there's all this pressure on Mourinho. Are they really expected to win the Premier League, Simon?
Well, I'm an Australia spider, but you're right. I do hail from the UK. I don't know whether he's expected to win the league, but I think he's expected to be top four. And I think the thing for Tottenham is that they don't win many trophies. They don't win. I think the last cup they won was, what, 7-8 years ago? So, all right, they got to the Champions League final under Pochettino. But I think there is an expectation that they should challenge for trophies and finish top four season in, season out. Would that be fair to say, Maury?
Yeah. And Spider, I think here in the UK at the moment, in terms of that expectation of a team that should be looking to go and win it with what they've done in the transfer market, Chelsea is the one.
Yeah.
Chelsea is the team they're talking about with the amount of money that's been spent there this season, the confidence that Lampard has now at that football club with Abramovich spending more, I believe, than any other previous manager. So the Chelsea expectation of winning something is very real and being reported heavily here in the UK media.
Talking of money, at the other end of the spectrum, sad news that Macclesfield Town wound up in the High Court this week. They owed a little over £500,000, which seems an absolute drop in the ocean when we talk about the sort of money we have been doing in the Premier League. They were relegated from the Football League, of course, last season. I'm told that somebody could have bought the club for as little as £150,000, but they could not find a buyer. These are really tough times for the clubs at the other end of the spectrum. Southend United apparently have got a stay of execution for the next few weeks. Wigan Athletic in big, big trouble as well. Spider, do you think we're likely to see a whole heap of these smaller clubs going out of existence? And if so, what damage does that do to the football ecosystem? We've been talking about promotion relegation in Australia here. Yeah. That's so vital, isn't it, for the production line of players?
Yeah, and I mean, this is probably something that's been happening. I think, obviously, this COVID has actually rushed everything on. It's sad because these clubs have been around for a long, long time. And like you said, maybe the club could have got bought for $150,000, but you know what comes with it? What are the overheads? You know, what are the bills that come with it? So we don't really know, but it's difficult times. I feel sorry for all the supporters there of clubs, the smaller clubs. I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot more around Europe. There's a lot of clubs that are struggling as well. Difficult times.
There's a restructure. There's a reset all over the world, isn't it? We're looking to grow. So our restructure is looking to add depth. Whereas, because there is such depth here in Europe, unfortunately, at that lower level, Simon, there also looks to be a reset along the way or very much around the corner. And it will be less teams, less depth.
I wonder, Maury, and obviously you've been in the UK for many years on and off over the last couple of decades, whether we're getting to a point in England particularly where they may have to
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Regionalize the divisions. Back in the day, in the 40s and 50s, you had Division 3 North, Division 3 South, and then they went to four national divisions. I wonder if we're getting to the point where we need to do that again to cut down travel and accommodation costs for the clubs, even in a country as small as England.
Yeah, but you're spot on there. I think that kind of conference, regional conference scenario, that kind of is in play kind of at the very lowest level in England, but that may be something that's branched out to try and be a little bit, like it says, creative and find some better financial solutions for the clubs at this level, Simon.
Okay, let's round out this section by heading to Asia. Bids received for the 2027 Asian Cup, some interesting ones among them. Qatar, of course, they seem to stick their hand up for every single football tournament at the moment. India, Iran, Saudi Arabia and Uzbekistan, the winner to be announced next year. Of course, the 2023 event is in China. I mean, if the AFC is smart financially, and presuming COVID is long gone by then, they go to India, don't they, Spider? That's where the money is.
Wow. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Massive developing country, plenty of cash, plenty of people, stadiums full, you would think. But my only thing is about the stadiums. I mean, I know what you're saying about infrastructure. You know, it costs a lot of money to get these stadiums built. Is India one of those countries that can whip things up that quickly? Probably. So that could be a good call.
Interesting. News this week out of Asia as well. The AFC Cup has been cancelled for 2020. I wonder whether the AFC Champions League might end up going down the same road, although there might be ramifications, of course, financially, if that were the case. It did resume last week. Not much joy for Mitch Duke's Al Tawan, his new club in Saudi Arabia, beaten by Persepolis 1-0 in both group games in Doha. A couple of clean sheets for Brad Jones, though, for Al Nassr against Sepahan. They won 2-0 on both occasions and they are through to the round of 16. Spider, just a question on Brad Jones. That never seems to really get mentioned these days for Socceroos duty. Obviously, we're not got international football at the moment. I'm trying to remember, has Brad actually officially retired from the national team or not?
I don't know, but I actually do follow every time he's having a game. He's having a great run over there. He's very successful. It's sort of like he's gone into the wilderness, but it's not the wilderness. It's a very big club over there. But because we don't talk about it much, we think he doesn't exist. But he's finishing his career. I can't remember how old Brad is at the moment. But, I mean, he's playing. He's
late
happy.
30s.
He's having success. Beg your pardon?
Late 30s, yeah.
Yeah, he's having a great career. And he extended again this year after last year's success he had. So it's a fantastic way for him to finish his career.
Last one for you, Maury, on this segment. Gianni Infantino says he wants to hold a Women's World Cup every 2 years and he wants a Club World Cup for women as well. Apparently, $1 billion has been pledged towards women's football until 2022. We know it's a great big growth area. Is that the way forward? Do we run the risk of too much of a good thing with a Women's World Cup every 2 years or not?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the $1 billion pledge, that for me, there's a lot of money involved, obviously, to grow the women's game. But again, when you look at trying to get to the level and the standard of the men and replicate what's happening there, every 2 years for me, I think, could be a little bit too much. But the push will be purely financial, Simon. I have no doubt about that.
Okay, thanks guys for the moment. Let's move on to our final segment for today. And we've got another fascinating guest waiting to talk to us on Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest today on Footballers Lives hails from Argentina, a creative midfielder from a town called Reconquista. And yes, I did try to get the Trek Artista from Reconquista to become a thing back in the day without success. He began his career with Unión de Santa Fe and then played for Newell's Old Boys and Curicó Unido in Chile before pitching up in Australia with Adelaide United 10 years ago. He delighted us with the Reds, winning the Johnny Warren medal, but left after just the one season to go to China with Henan Zhanye. And then it was back to Australia in 2012 with first Melbourne Victory, then the Central Coast Mariners, and finally the Newcastle Jets. Since then, he's been in the USA to play for Jacksonville Armada, great name, back to Chile with Curicó Unido, to Indonesia with Persib Bandung and Bali United, and finally back to South Australia with Adelaide City, where he announced his retirement earlier this year. It is a big podcast welcome to Marcos Flores. How are you, Marcos?
Good. Good, Simon. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
No, great to have you with us. Great to have you with us. Marcos, you come from the same area of Argentina as Gabriel Batistuta. It's a region that produced players such as Leopoldo Luque and Neri Pumpido, as well as Batistuta and yourself. So you must have fallen in love with the game of football at a very early age.
Yes, when I was really young, at 8 years old, I wanted to buy a Fiorentina jersey. Even knowing, I didn't even know, you know, where Fiorentina come from. But this purple thing was in our brains. These little kids, you know, in the town of 80,000 people. And obviously when I idolized him, because coming from the same environment, same development, to achieve what he has done in his career, he was a person to look up to.
You
both moved to Australia to live.
Yeah. Literally, 90% of the foreigners that come here, man, we get in love with Australia. This is a fact.
Did you ever meet Batistuta? Have you ever met him?
Yes. Yeah. Well, me as a child, I just asked a photo, a signature, you know, when he was in the petrol station once, and then his son became a good friend of my stepbrother back home, and now his son was asking a jersey, you know, of mine. So it was quite crazy. Gabriel is really, really a quiet human being and really, really humble. But he's just really, really private also. I never got a pleasure, you know, to have a coffee or something like that. But it is a person. Reconquista is too small, guys. It's like, you know, you know everyone in the town. It's impossible to don't know somebody.
Like so
Marcos, it's like Washington next to my town.
When you were growing up, I don't know if you were a supporter of Unión de Santa Fe, but that was your first team, the local side in that region, and you scored on your debut after coming off the bench in a Primera B game against Tiro Federal de Rosario. What do you remember of that?
It was the best day of my life. The best day. That was the best day in my career. Right. I say it in Spanish for an interview. For an interview in Argentina, reflecting on my career, they obviously a lot of people said that my highlights in football. I'm probably the right that was Adelaide United becoming the Johnny Warren Medal medalist. And I can obviously in terms of football and whatever potentially can be right. But I was reflecting every single goal that I scored in my career, and Unión de Santa Fe, and that day was one of the few times that I kissed the jersey. So then I got really in love with Adelaide United back in the day, but I never kissed it. And I Why saw a lot of players going through that they kiss one jersey and then they kiss the other one, then they kiss the other one. Ah, yeah, yeah.
Very true. Very true.
And I actually didn't know Craig until I retired, because I was watching. I was thinking, wow, how crazy is that? I kissed my first three goals in the club, and I never ever kissed it again.
I want to.
And I was not thinking.
I want to know if any of you boys, Spider and Maury, did you ever kiss the badge of a club that you played for?
Yeah, of course I did.
I never did, but like I said, for me, the club that I had the best association with the amount of time it was Rangers, but I used to laugh and wind the players up. We used to sign new players every other year. Mate, they've been there 2 minutes, they score a goal, they kiss the jersey, and as Marcos says, 6 months later, they're no longer at the club.
But yeah. I didn't have the opportunity, Maury, to score a goal to kiss the jersey.
How many jerseys did you kiss, Spider?
Only Sydney, Croatia.
But did you see Simon, that three of us, we got to the club that makes you a player or gives you a chance, the club where you born.
Yeah.
In this club, Simon, in Argentina, I was not getting paid.
Well, that's playing, all right. That's nothing different to the A-League at the moment.
Oh, dear. Marcos, let's bring this back on track. You had a spell with Newell's Old Boys in 2006 where you played alongside the likes of Oscar Cardozo and Justo Villa, two Paraguayan internationals, and then went off to Chile in 2009. And as we mentioned, you came to Australia a year later. How did the link with Australia, the A-League, Adelaide United come about?
Because the DVD flew from South America to Australia to the agent that was really new in the game. And he thought, okay, I'm going to send this DVD to the 10 clubs in Australia. And he started with Adelaide United because he started with an A.
That's not bad.
That is how my DVD, because that was not a moment on YouTube, it was a DVD flying from South America to the hands of Jose Martinez, which is, he used to write a newspaper in Spanish in Sydney, and whatever. So this man introduced to Adelaide United office, but he sent to the mail that, like that. So the secretary checked that DVD, said to Michael Petrillo, Aurelio Widmar, hey, we got one DVD, okay, just put it there. And they saw it. Carl Beard flew to Chile to see me train.
And it all started.
And that's
from
how we end up. I end up coming to Australia, which was at 24 years of age, was a big, big, big mistake to my career. But that mistake, like I said in other interviews, was the best mistake that I ever made.
And you're still here 10 years later. You had that one season, as you said, with Adelaide United, 10-11, where everything you touch seemed to turn to gold and to goals. Yeah. You won the Johnny Warren medal. You scored a hat-trick against North Queensland Fury. You scored that goal that everybody remembers. It was just a season that seemed everything clicked for you. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I was surrounded by the best teammates that I could have. I could never ever ask nothing better than Travis Dodd and Matthew Leckie asking me the balls in behind. Everything was perfect to make me to show my strength. I was played in the perfect position in the middle of the field. Every single player, when they saw me with the ball, they were running forward. The two midfielders, they were winning the ball and just passing forward. And we got a number 9, Sergio Van Dijk, that was holding everything, that gave me time for a slow player like me to get inside of the box.
But Marcos, very, very smart player, a very intelligent player. Your experience in Australia, you travelled all over the world in terms of your football journey. But how did you find the level in Australia? How did that compare to a lot of places that you've been to?
I think I think, Craig, that A-League technically and physically is really demanding. Mm-hmm. It's really demanding. Now it becomes more technical. Before was more, you know, about rushing and everyone tackling and everyone fighting, but was quite, the teams were really stretched. Everything was really open and was, you know, counter-attack football for both sides. And that was the year that Brisbane made that click to start changing the possession football. But then comparing with China, comparing with Indonesia, with comparing with, I don't know, second division in Chile, football in Australia, I embrace what the standards are in Australia, that we can evolve, yeah, for sure. And what I think that it's not a technical, it's not a tactical things that we're missing. It's just the spirit of the game that is not quite there. You know, that things that make us all the fans to be in love.
Are you thinking that's more like the culture, Marco? So again, the environment that you were brought up in, a lot of South Americans are brought up in, is football is everything. You know, you speak about Batistuta, Fiorentina, purple was in your head without knowing where Fiorentina was.
Yeah.
We still lack this culture, which is maybe something that you're touching on there.
Yes, but you know what, Craig? I want us as a football fans and football family, where my background might be South American and your background, Spider, might be Croatian. Now, it got so empty, in my opinion, in terms of a spirit, because apparently to be extremely South American is a problem here. And to be extremely Croatian or extremely, it got some kind of restrictions that doesn't allow us to express ourselves.
Yeah. That's pretty well put, you're probably right there. It's probably because we're so multicultural and you know, everything has to be the Australian way. And I do agree with you, because I think we could have had a lot more South American players come to Australia and be very successful, because the quality and skill to be a South American player, we know that a lot of South American players don't like to run. We know that. Yeah. But we know that. That's normal. And we touched on it before about James, now that's at Everton. I mean, the same type of player that said around the world that he can't play because he doesn't run enough. But if you find the right manager that wants to set up his team around that quality player, you can be very successful.
Yeah. And also, why not to see in A-League a club, that with the background of Croatia? With 10,000, why not?
Yeah, we've gone past our cultures a little bit, and we need to bring it back a little bit.
Maybe that's football. Going to happen with the second division.
It will.
Just want to bring us back to your playing career a little bit. You left Adelaide United sort of quite quickly and went off to China with Henan Xianyu. Well, why did that eventuate? Because at the time, I remember a lot of Adelaide United fans being very, very unhappy that you'd left the club so quickly.
Yeah, but I was 24 years old, Simon.
Yeah.
So you wanted to go.
How many foreigners back in that day were 24 years old?
That's true.
No, there was always the older player that would come to Australia, Marcos. Not at this age, yeah? So you were very young.
Not at this age. I was really underage to actually stuck to the club for 10 years. And Adelaide United was not in the position to make me a player to stay in the country. Why? Because they were more worried about, they were more kind to sell me than just to keep me.
Yeah.
And in the newspaper was the fans. Yeah, we want Marcos to stay forever. I wanted to stay forever. You know why, Simon, I wanted to stay forever? Because I was the best player in the league in that moment.
Yeah,
I was loving every single second with these guys. But Craig, that season before I moved to China, Travis left, Matthew Leckie left, Matt Hughes left, and Paul Reed left, Kongwai left. So it was seven players gone. You know what Rini Kulin said to me? Oh, we're going to change the entire culture of the team. Oh, great. See you later. I'm gone. And you know what, Simon? I was right, because Adelaide United finished second last the following season.
They did indeed. We've got a Twitter question here, Marcos. You came back, of course, after a short spell in China with Henan Zhenya to sign for Melbourne Victory. And this question is from Max Conley. Why did things not really click with him and Ange Postecoglou when at the Victory? Because on paper, it seemed to be a perfect fit. But you just, this is Max's view, you didn't look comfortable in that system. Is that a fair question?
I was a false nine.
Which is not your position.
I remember I met Thomas Broich in one award, and he said, is that Ange trying the false nine thing? And I said, yes. Do you like it? I said, no. Oh, I didn't like me either. He couldn't do any business. I was unlucky.
Yeah. All right. Just to round off your playing career, obviously you went to the mayor.
Let Simon, before we go forward, I wanted to say.
Okay, go.
Ange can be, in my opinion, the best coach in terms of tactics, teaching, da, 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 da. The fact that I didn't fit in that system is just a football-wise.
Yes.
I'm not saying that I didn't shy or I find excuses. No, because I'm happy. I played 95% of the games. I scored a goal of the year. I did what I could, but it was not my position. That's it.
Okay.
But big respect for Ange, Simon, Big respect in football knowledge.
Of course. Let's round off your playing career. You went to the Mariners and the Jets, as we said, and then the USA and then Chile and then on to Indonesia, first with Persib Bandung, along with, I think, Sergio van Dijk and Diogo Ferreira. And then you had a good season with Bali United in 2017. You scored 8 goals in 26 games, got very close to winning the Indonesian championship, losing out on a head-to-head against Bayangkara. A Twitter question from Ben Archer. What was it like playing for Bali United? We've heard stories of violent fans and fixed matches over there. Is that an accurate description or is that just fantasy?
Yeah, it is a challenge.
Yeah.
It is a challenge, but tough people can get through and make money through to Southeast Asia. But if you're not tough here, you can't survive more than one month, 2 months. And that's it, because it's you. The standards of A-League are so good, guys, that once that you move, doesn't matter if the level increase in football-wise, like going, I don't know, second division in Greece or second division in Italy, you start missing the things, you know. It's normal to miss the flights, that the flight from Sydney to Melbourne. You start missing that every 15, you got your paycheck in your account. You don't need to even look at it. So when you go to different football, you need to embrace the challenge. And this is what I did in Indonesia. I loved the challenge, but I also know what the things got wrong there, that Jesus Christ, you know, when you go and play away, you play against 12, not against 11. And if you cross half of the field, you have an unbelievable game. I remembered that I was quite of the foreigners and the leaders of the team, to the point the captain said to me, you, Marcos, speak to the team. So I have to go to learn a little bit Indonesian to start, you know, being accelerating the process. And I remember, Craig, that you're going to laugh. I said to the guys, let's get a point. Just 1 point away. If we drew 5 times away and we win every single game at home, that is guaranteed we're going to do that, we're going to win the championship. And we went with that mentality that we're going to lose underdog, that we were able to win few games on the road. I think we won 4 and we nearly won the championship.
Wow.
But it took teamwork. It took to overlook the showers, overlook the meals after the game. I overlooked the fact that we didn't have cars, only motorcycles, you know. But, you know, you go through. And if you love the game and you want your career and you want to be successful, that is the things that you need to go through.
But that's a great experience, Marcos. That football experience, different cultures, obviously a lot of different things happen. And for a lot of Australian players that are still looking to travel and maybe not of the level to go to the big five in Europe, which is the case now, that mental side that you touch on, it's just so important, isn't it, really? Because you get thrown so many challenges.
Well, I want to mention one good friend here, Austin Ayubi. He's an 18-year-old playmaker. He reminds me a lot about myself when I was growing up, you know? With that little flavor that he didn't know where he was going to be, but not perfect. I was not a perfect player. I was not a European. I was just like, try to make a through ball. And he reminds me a lot of that. And he called me. He said, Marcos, can we have a coffee? I said, Austin, what happened? I said, I'm gonna leave NPL. I don't want to sit on the bench on NPL. I'm gonna go and get a contract in the second division in Cyprus. Okay. He said, he asked me, what do you think? And I said, I think it's all right. If you think there is an opportunity, yeah, it's going to be first division. It's going to be professional. Yes. Okay. Just go for it. But let's have a coffee. I'm going to explain you what you're going to go through.
Yes.
In the first month, you're going to meet your girlfriend. The second month, you're going to visit a PlayStation with your brother. The third month, you're going to miss your mom's birthday. But let me tell you something, buddy. If you get through, you're gonna you're gonna pay bills playing sport. When you have this doubt, call me. I'm gonna tell you what I've been through in China, what I've been through in Australia the first month that I arrived.
Yeah,
because Adelaide is beautiful, mate. But I couldn't speak English, so I was behind. I was outside a Subway to buy a sandwich, and I couldn't say tomato. I couldn't say lettuce. So I just went there and I said, "Hey, this."
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing the same thing in Greece now. Don't worry.
and you know what? The first 7 days, Craig, I didn't eat anything because when the girl was telling me which Italian bread or whatever, no problem. And just left.
And I tried
to buy a sandwich in the service station, you know?
Marcos, let me tell you, it was good that you couldn't eat. It was good for your skin folds because I know you South Americans aren't very good with your skin folds.
He's good with the martyr today. Marcos, that sort of brings us full circle. You as we say, announced your retirement last year. Before that, though, I want to sort of talk about what that's led you into, because you had a bit of a personal epiphany about what you wanted to do with your life around about the time of the World Cup in Russia, and your father passed away. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
When I finished that season with Bali United, the president wanted to extend me, and he even gave me a role. I said, if you stay one more year, you're going to be the next coach. And I said, no, thank you very much. It's all right. I feel something that was not right. And when I said to, you know, guys, you play the sport, you don't reject a contract when you don't have anything in hands. Is that correct? But that year I did it, Simon. I didn't know for what, you know, but I came back. I was tired because I put a lot of energy. So when I went back home, my father passed away from a heart attack from one day to another. Pop, disappeared. So that really makes me upset, because I was traveling for 10 years thinking one day I will stop and I will enjoy with my father every single day. And I didn't have a time, you know, I didn't have that chance. So I fixed all the belongings from my father, and my wife Russian, she said, let's go to Moscow and let's do the rehab there, you know, emotionally. And I went to Moscow, but I couldn't train at 30 years old, 31. I couldn't find that motivation to train. And I said, you know what, I'm going to quit football. I'm going to quit professional football because I don't want to do a pre-season. I don't want to do nothing. So I decided, guys, to actually start teaching soccer in the street to random people.
Beautiful.
And I went so mental on this that I end up from Russia. I went out to Greece, Heraklion, from Heraklion to Palestine, to Israel, to Egypt, to Kenya, to Tanzania, to Madagascar, to South Africa. Just teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching different, you know, in with my body language, until I received a call from LA City that they wanted to donate soccer boots. Mm-hmm. And I said to the LA City boys, I said, look, guys, it's really kind and lovely from you, but I'm helping kids in the street. How can I track them? Let me come back to Argentina and I will give you, you know, I will give you some address to send a few things. Thank you very much. And they told me, what about playing, Marcos? And I said, no, man. And he said, what about engaging the community in Adelaide? Okay. Yeah, I like that. So that's why I came and I joined Adelaide City for a year. And that opens a spectrum in my brain and a conflict, yeah, of how to approach the youth development in Australia. How to make the fees affordable. How to help the kids to really evolve and not just paying fees and turning two times per week in a club with no purpose. So I got into this mode and I'm refusing to be just an academy. I'm not this. I'm a person that you can meet me every Tuesday in the park. Every Tuesday. I'm not having term one, term two, term three. Every Tuesday. Thursday.
But that's a great story, Marcos. I mean, because it's a way of giving back to something that you love very much. It's about giving opportunity to everybody. We keep talking about football in Australia, how we believe it's not inclusive to all, down to the money that you touched on. So, Amazing that you're doing that. That's a fantastic thing. And I'm sure as you're speaking, we can hear your passion. It's obviously bringing you a lot of joy as well.
Cray, I loved it. And the things that I'm talking to the youth development coaches that we discuss things when we get together is that we need to learn as the coaches that we got at least 7 or 8 different approach if we want to include everyone to play the game. Because if we just only go with one recipe, with one approach, we filter in a lot of kids.
Yeah.
But now, since I came back to Australia, I started to coach under 10s, kids that won't have the fundamentals in place and kids that they don't have it. So the two trainings are different.
Yeah.
Same age, but two different trainings. Is that correct?
Of course.
Yeah, you have to. Now, for everyone's got their different levels.
That is the point. So, cerebral palsy kids. We established the cerebral palsy team. Kids with a disability. Yeah. Right. Now, they receive a different approach. Now, these kids have proved me that the approach have to be different, but there is no limit. Because the key, you know what the cerebral palsy players, which I'm really proud and I send them a big kiss. You know what the cerebral players here in South Australia that we train in one Saturday every 2 weeks for free, Craig, in the park, yeah? We're loving each other. It's perfect. Now, Craig, they got something that the professional players, some they got and some they don't. Yes. You know what it is? They know the limitations. They know the limitations, Spider. And because they know the limitations, they really always ready to receive the ball. Because they know the limitations, they don't try to shoot from halfway. They play tiki-taka, Craig. They complete the drill better than kids of 14 years old. That they think they know everything.
And we
got it on video. So what I'm saying is, if we're really honest and we really wanted to evolve players, we can do that. But we need to put a lot of passion, a lot of love to do that. And in the club that help us to deliver the full version of development.
Marcos, we could talk about this for hours on end. Unfortunately, our limitations are that we're running out of time. It's fascinating stuff. I know you're making a documentary as well, so we're gonna watch out very closely for that. And we applaud the fantastic work you're doing with kids down in South Australia, and indeed that you have done right around the world. One final question for you. It's our Twitter question of the week. Make it a short answer if you can, because as I say, we're almost out of time. It's from Nicholas Rapolo, who wins a $100 voucher for Outback Steakhouse. Thank you very much to our wonderful sponsors, along with Streamgate. And Nicholas asks, Marcos has been critical of A-League clubs and their lack of connection to their communities. Why, after 16 years, does he think they haven't done that? As brief
because
as
we
can be, Marcos.
Because we become following the business side, and clubs are family, are not business. It's a family that make business, you know, because the clubs is like that. Football moves money, but clubs are family. When you go to Rangers, you got the person who cleans the locker room is the same one who cleans for the last 100 years. That's how you roll. That's how you roll the club. And if the club doesn't know how to do that, and they don't treat the fans like friends, like brothers, and only people who actually pay $10 to watch a game, you're going to have less and less and less every day. In South America, 30% of the stadium doesn't pay to go to the stadium. 30%. That makes potentially 80,000 people to come for free. Is that happening here in Simon, in A-League?
No, not enough of it. It's definitely something we can do a lot better, Marcos. There's no doubt about that. And like you touched on the kids that you're working with, there needs to be more than one approach to anything.
100%.
Marcos, it's been an absolute pleasure hearing you talk about both your career and what you're currently up to. All we can say is thanks very much for spending some time with us on Shim Spider and so much more. Really appreciate it, mate.
Much love and respect to all of you. And thanks for everything what you do for the game in Australia. Like you say, Craig, nothing is wrong. We have to evolve what we have on the table. Let's embrace the A-League and help it to evolve, to make an evolution.
Absolutely.
We don't need to change anything. We're going forward. Slowly, but we're going forward.
Brilliant. Great pleasure to have
thanks,
you on.
Thanks, Marcos.
Fantastic.
Great stuff.
Much love, respect, guys. Thank you very much.
That is us for another week. Thanks again to our sponsors, Streamgate and Outback Steakhouse. Another global edition of the podcast coming your way, same time, same place next week. Until then, bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.